Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Dairy on the Air. I'm Andy Vance, and I'm the host for today's discussion with Midwest Dairy. I'm joined by Mike Lee, co-founder and CEO of Alpha Food Labs and founder of The Future Market. Recently, Mike presented at the Dairy Experience Forum, a Midwest Dairy-sponsored event bringing industry players together to learn more about today's consumer. The 21st century eater gravitates toward foods providing health, sustainability, and ultimately experience. Today, we'll discuss how dairy can fit into the picture. Let's jump right in. Mike, let's start off for folks who didn't have a chance to hear your presentation at the Dairy Experience Forum with a bit about your background and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. I mean, my entire career has really been dedicated to innovation. Innovation in a specific context around how do you help established organizations, industries, things like that, innovate and stay ahead of the curve and not get caught flat-footed to the winds of change with consumers and the marketplace or things like that. You know, I've always been passionate about food. I grew up in a food family, I started a underground dining club here to kind of experiment with and create food experiences. And then one day Chobani called, and at that point it was still early enough that I had to Google what Chobani was. And they had this really interesting point of view. They were saying, we are, you know, a fast growing yogurt company, but we want to build this innovation team of people mostly not from the food industry. And I thought that was so refreshing because they were basically saying, like, let's find people that have open minds, expansive thinking. They can see things in a different way. And there's not as much of that entrenched expertise in them of this is how it's already been done. You can teach anyone how a yogurt factory works at a high level. But I think to be able to pull all these diverse kind of things together and then focus it on advancing food innovation, that's really what my career has all been about.
So maybe that's a good segue into a question I've had, I guess, since reading your bio. What is a futurist food lab? What is it that you do?
Yeah, so Alpha Food Labs is our kind of core business, and the main deliverables there are innovation strategy and innovation product innovation for food companies, right? And so we work with, you know, companies like Danone and large CPG companies to help them kind of think about their supply chains and innovation in the future of the consumer. Now, obviously, as all of your listeners are going to know, it's really difficult to innovate while you're running a high churn business. You know, it's hard to think about how do we blow this whole thing up and reinvent it while you're literally just trying to get product out the door. And we get that, and we have to innovate within that context in our client work. But like, we wanted to build a separate little sandbox on the side where the deliverable was not tied to necessarily producing a new product in today's world. It was dedicated to being free of some of the constraints you have in everyday kind of operations of a business. And you can think more ambitiously and freely about the future. So on my talk, I brought up the example of the auto industry and concept cars. I grew up in the Detroit area. So growing up, you go to the auto show all the time. And, you know, the concept cars were always my favorite part because it showed you this, there was this product you couldn't buy. They never manufactured more than one of them. And it was just there to spark your imagination, both for the industry and for people about what's possible in this industry. And it really struck me when I remember going to my early like trade shows, like Expo West and things like that in food, because, you know, again, I'm coming from tech. And when you go to Silicon Valley and you say, what's innovative? That means a certain thing. And then I remember going to these food shows and saying like, here's like, some super minor packaging innovation won an innovation of the year award, you know? And you're like, okay, that's important. You got to have that. But like, who's pushing the envelope and thinking deeper into the future? And so that's exactly what we do is we look at what we call weak signals. So little signals that are bubbling up today, right? Imagine you rewound 20 years ago and you maybe observed a few people started eating gluten-free stuff, right? And then now that explodes into this huge thing. Our goal is to really try to look at those signals and try to assess them and amplify them to say, this thing could change the industry. And then we do a lot of conceptual products and we do a lot of brainstorms and workshops to basically understand the future. And in some cases, we will play, you know, kind of these workshops and experiences to say, in 20 years, what product might you see on the shelf? And that exercise is very analogous to what the auto industry would do with, in 20 years, what kind of car would you see?
I love the analogies from whether it's tech to cars and so much innovation. And that leads us to a group that's all about innovation. And what you describe as the 21st century eater. Who is the 21st century eater and what is it that makes them tick? What's important to them?
Yeah. So it's a very values-based eater. And it's a very demanding eater. And it's a very individualized, the individual is prioritized above everything. The shorthand for how I sort of describe the 21st century eater is that they're demanding things at the intersection of health, sustainability, and nutrition. We've always had these three things in play. And if you think about the things in the supermarket aisle, most of them hit one or two of those things pretty well. The trick is who can hit all three at the same time, right? And who can hit it all three at the same time in different ways for different people. So I don't want people to think that there's only one version of health, one version of sustainability, one version of nutrition. It should be authentic and not greenwashing or anything like that. As anyone knows, if you're thinking about sustainability, things can be sustainable or unsustainable depending what you're optimizing for, you know? But that's okay. These can all coexist. Because even though I think the main values model is around health, sustainability, and nutrition, we are such a huge, diverse population worldwide that's digitally connected and broken up into food tribes that there's probably 100 different ways to tackle health out there. And those all represent pretty decent markets that you could probably build a good business around just serving that niche. Look at, you know, the whole movement around keto. You know, it's a multi-billion dollar movement. Like, you could literally just build an entire brand on this sort of previously obscure diet that people did. That's sort of the follow-up to the sentence I hear so much in these kind of future food talks, which is, how do we feed the 10 billion people in 2050? Well, yeah, it's a valid question, but it's also, to me, says there's potentially 10 billion versions of what people want out there. And why that's different now than before is that if I'm a paleo vegan who likes yoga sitting in the middle of North Dakota in the 1970s, I probably didn't have anyone to talk to about that. But we're not in the 1970s. Today, I can literally just go on Twitter and put those search terms in there, and I can now form a group of, I don't know, a couple hundred people worldwide, right? And because we are an e-commerce driven, we're becoming more e-commerce driven as a food industry, brands can find us. They can buy the paleo vegan keywords on Google and sell me something. So this is what's kind of happening to the food industry, is like it's almost in a sense the end of mass brands. I always say it'd be near impossible to start a company like Coca-Cola with a single product. The red can of Coke, it'd be really nearly impossible to start that company today from scratch and have it be the same thing, because there's no such thing as here's one product, every single person in the world is going to want this anymore.
So when you talk about some of those those trends that the individual 21st century eater is most concerned about, you mentioned nutrition, environment, health, all these things. Is there a hierarchy of needs, so to speak, that plays in there? Do you find that this trumps that, you know, environment's more important than health, or does it really vary that much by individuals? Are there any kind of broader themes we can draw?
So the platonic ideal is that people want to hit all three of those things, right? Health, sustainability, experience. The truth is, you can lean harder into one of those points of the triangle depending on the mode you're in. And sometimes it's different within the person, right? So, you know, if I'm got a good income, I'm not under stress, and I have a lot of choices in front of me, I'm at much more luxury to be able to lean on all three of those at one point versus if I'm like, I lost my wallet and I'm on a road trip in the middle of nowhere, right? I just want something comforting. You know, the elephant in the room, obviously, is that COVID forced us to slide two rungs down the ladder of the hierarchy of needs, right? So I bring up the example of, like, you know, you look at some of the sustainability movements that we've seen over the past few years, and the example of plastic straws and plastic bags came up, right? And, you know, everyone's banning them, and you sort of look like, you know, in some places people look at you like a pariah if you've got a plastic straw, right? So COVID hits, and then all of a sudden we stop talking about that. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but it's just interesting because it really showed you in real time, when pressed, when stressed, when threatened, a lot of those higher order values, I think, because we're human, they don't go out the window completely. You just don't prioritize them up front, you know?
I want to look at this triangle we talked about earlier, health, sustainability, experience, kind of 3 points on the compass. What does that mean for food companies? When you look at those, are there things that dairy can take advantage of with regard to those trends in the 21st century eater?
Yeah, so I think the trick is, for the target you're trying to go after for your product, you got to go deep and figure out how do they want the health, sustainability, and the experience, right? Because that's really where the action's at, is tell me how you're going to nail that thing. And, you know, it comes back to another point that we talked about in the talk, which was that, you know, McKinsey did a bunch of studies around the dairy industry, and it noted that, admittedly, a lot of dairy CEOs self-admitted that the industry, is, on average, is not good at consumer insights. You know, they are confident and very proficient in things like manufacturing and processing and all that operational excellence, which is great. But the thing that kind of got left behind and is like the last place, like, thing they feel confident about is how well they understand the future of the consumer, right? I think that's a key kind of thing for the dairy industry to do, is to start building bigger muscles around how you read the consumer and try to get deeper into those three columns of health, sustainability, and experience. How do you keep an ongoing kind of panel of deep consumer insights, you know? And I'm not talking about necessarily like, hey, here's this one, you know, here's A2 milk. Do you like this? Yes or no? It's more about, like, you know, what's your life like? You know, how do you need to feel at this part of the day? You know, what do you want for Christmas and why? Do you even celebrate Christmas? You know, so things like that. Like, I think those are the open questions that go beyond the demographics. Like, anyone can buy a report that tells you that, like, you know, females 18 to 24 buy 12% less milk than whoever. But it's really like, why do they do that? That's the action. And honestly, that's where you find the most rich inspiration for innovation. Because if you're just working on the same research report everybody else is, you're probably just all solving the same problem, right? That's a big thing we did at Chobani, honestly. We would go into people's homes with nearly no agenda. We didn't have a product to sell. We were literally just trying to figure out, like, how do you live? How do you eat? And then we go back and we say, how do we insert ourselves into that? And I think that's a big mindset of how you get more specific on the trifecta of health, sustainability, experience.
Let's look at an example. And Chobani is a good one there of how you did that. But if you're putting yourself into the boots of another dairy brand, a dairy company, do these trends affect what consumers are buying at retail, how they shop? Does it affect how, where, who they eat with? You know, what are some of the trends that are driving that group, and how do we take advantage of those as a dairy brand or company?
So it's interesting now, and it's a really good time to start now, because COVID has thrown all of our behaviors and it's reshuffled the deck, right? So I would almost argue, like, if I did a research thing with consumers in November of last year, it's probably obsolete by now, you know, and it's only July. And so I think it's fresh because we've all had to kind of relearn our behaviors around food. And some people don't really know what they're doing, right? A lot of people started home cooking, and everyone's having various degrees of success and failure with that. There's no more eating out at restaurants by and large for a lot of people. So, you know, there's that. And then there's just general stress and safety, right? It's like, I think people are generally rejecting kind of frivolous novel things today and going back to the basics, right? And so, you know, again, I don't have the answer to that yet, but it's stuff that we actively research with our clients and stuff like that, is to say, like, you know, what new behaviors are being created that the dairy industry or whatever industry can kind of help with, you know? So it's an exciting time now to see how those things are completely being redefined.
I love that kind of concept that here's our chance, you know, to take a shot because we're reshuffling the deck. I think that's really powerful. So when we come out of this, let's say, and we're listening to these 21st century eaters and how they've already started to change the marketplace, given your background with some dairy brands and experience in the Food Future Lab, what are some things you think dairy does well? What are some areas where you think, hey, you might look at this, maybe some advice, recommendations, if you will, to the dairy producer, processor, and brand professional listening?
You look at the statistics of how much milk we're able to make today versus like 30 years ago with less resources. Like, that's incredible, right? So clearly the industry has been investing heavily into the science and talent and efficiency to make as much milk on as little resource as possible. So I think that's good. And that's some good headwinds that you can kind of use as a start. You know, it comes back to, I think that the industry needs a better innovation engine. Consumer insights is certainly part of that. You know, one of the reasons I cited in 2018 for, and I know the whole, you know, plant-based milk or drink segment is still small compared to the amount of gallons of animal milk are being sold. But you can't argue with the fact that that segment has gotten so much energy and press around it and people and buzz, right? And, you know, I think there's a big part of the attraction to some of those products is that it's something new in that aisle. You know, there's something happening in that aisle versus, you know, the gallon of milk we have today is more or less on the surface the same gallon of milk we had a long time ago, right? And so consumers just kind of got complacent on it, you know? And then you compound that with the effect of you have the millennial consumer being the new predominant buyer of stuff, you know, and they don't have, again, they don't have that legacy necessarily of like, oh yeah, we always had milk, you know, in the fridge growing up. That creates attention and buzz to something new. Now, we can argue all day about whether it's warranted or not, but the point is there's energy in that category, you know? There's energy in that category, but there's also substantial kind of energy that's directed at things that are trending around sustainability. And again, we can debate whether it's sustainable or not, but the perception, unfortunately, is that we are more sustainable, right? And they've been able to benefit from that. They're closing the flavor gap. I mean, this stuff 10 years ago did not taste nearly what it tastes like today, and they're slowly closing that flavor gap. So what happens if they completely close that flavor gap? You know, what do you do? So I think that's a big part of, I think, what dairy can do. I always love to do this question and this exercise with clients where I ask the client, you know, if you were your competitor, how would you destroy your own business? And that's always such a revealing and really uncomfortable question to ask because it forces you to empathize with the enemy. And really pick on your own weaknesses that you see, right? And then you come back around, you say, oh my gosh, there's the attack plan from the enemy. How do we shore our ship up better so we can deal with it? And so I think that kind of questioning, that kind of open-mindedness and that kind of imagination and the things like that, that's the thing that I think is gonna project the dairy industry, you know, forward for the next 100 years.
Straight out of the Art of War. You know, that's some brilliant strategy and tactical approach to things. I love it. Now, as we wrap up our time here, you know, I want you to put your futurist hat back on for a minute. And we've all been so laser focused on the present and COVID and challenges in our industry, but what's on the horizon we're not thinking of yet or that we're not talking about now? What are trends that you think might emerge as we pull out of this and navigate forward? And what does it mean for the dairy industry?
The one that I think needs more of a serious look is the cell cultured stuff. It's still unclear how it's going to completely pan out, but the transformation it would mean if it does pan out would be so insanely disruptive to the traditional dairy industry. So, you know, if I was in, you know, dairy producer, I would be taking it at face value and serious that they could actually achieve the goals that they wanted to, right? If they don't, then that's great. I can keep doing what I'm doing. And maybe in the process of me preparing for that threat, I've done so much more to better promote my product or innovate my product, right? You know, the data says that the prices on that stuff is coming down. The data says that consumers are open-minded about it and they're willing to try it. And you look at all of the things that we saw during COVID when there's this huge bottleneck at the processing factories or you know, the food service packaging went away and we didn't have enough processing for retail and people are dumping millions of gallons of milk. Think about how a factory that makes quote-unquote milk out of real milk cells without cows is more flexible than the current model. They can just shut the machine down and stop, or they can crank it up a little bit more, you know? That is like one of the things I was thinking about. I was like, wow, like the way that whole cellular agriculture kind of model of manufacturing actually is really well suited to something like a COVID shock, because they can pivot on a dime way quicker. You know, you can't tell a cow to just stop making milk, even though people aren't buying it. You can stop the bioreactor from making milk. You know, so things like that, I think, and again, it comes back to that mentality of, you know, don't look at how something on the horizon might destroy your industry so you can better prepare. Don't feel bad about yourself about it. Just do it so you can be better prepared for it. And you know, you don't want to like end up like, you know, a Blockbuster Video not giving Netflix its due. So, yeah, I think that's a big thing to really think more about.
Mike, I think that's powerful advice. I want to thank Mike Lee for a great discussion today, some deep insights into the future of the dairy industry, into food innovation in general. It's exciting for me to see how today's consumer makes decisions and drives the marketplace that the dairy industry is operating in. Also inspiring to hear how dairy is a category that can meet some of the values important to today's consumers, good stories to tell about health, the nutritive value of dairy for sure, the sustainability picture, and overall great eating experience. And I hope today's conversation proved the importance of continuing to build on that success and to listening to experts and innovators like Mike as we build that future success together. In closing, my name is Andy Vance. I'm hosting for Midwest Dairy's Dairy on the Air podcast. For you, the listener, thanks for joining us. If you want to hear more about some of the various issues affecting our dairy industry, subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platforms, including Stitcher, Spotify, and iTunes. Or you can always check out our website, midwestdairy.com, for future episodes. Until next time, have a great day.